Thank you.
Thanks, Steve-O. All right, I'm Jerry, I'm an alcoholic. I'll be your 10-minute speaker. I was just sitting back there pacing back and forth. And then I asked myself, why am I stressing? Just, all I got to do is tell the truth, right? And that shouldn't be too hard now. First of all, I want to start out something that describes my life pretty well till I became a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. On page 18, it kind of describes probably all of us. An illness of this sort, and we have come to believe it an illness, involves those about us in a way no other human sickness can. If a person has cancer, all are sorry for him, and no one is angry or hurt, but not so with the alcoholic illness. For with it, there goes annihilation of all things worthwhile in life. Engulfs all whose lives touch the sufferers. It brings misunderstanding, fierce resentment, financial insecurity, disgusted friends and employers, warped lives of blameless children and wives and parents. Anyone can increase the list. Well, that pretty much described my life to a T. In my days of drinking, all of those things were in my life. Financial insecurity, disgusted friends and employers, warped lives of blameless children and wives. I was born an alcoholic. It's not something that I could put my finger on this circumstance or this situation caused it. I can't say that my parents weren't together. I had no education. I was abused. I had everything. I was born into a well-to-do family. Parents who were married and loved each other dearly. I was the youngest of four siblings. I had three older sisters. I was the youngest and the only boy, so even being that, I was spoiled, back then, they didn't have sonograms, and my dad had already had three daughters, and I was born, and my mom said he was in the delivery room, and they said, it's a boy, and my dad, he passed out, I guess, and he said, I have my boy, and I'm done, and, he was an alcoholic, but he's one of the coolest dudes I knew. He passed away several years ago from cancer, but, I had everything, he put me through private military school. If it pertained to school or sports, he was a big advocate for that. And but from the youngest I could remember, I felt really inferior inside. I just felt really I had low self-esteem. I got good grades and I played sports and I was good at sports and, I had everything a kid would want. But I just felt bankrupt inside. And as soon as I found alcohol, I think I was right around 12. It was at a wedding reception with a friend who I went to the military school with. And I was taking sips of champagne off of everybody's glass that was still left on the table, and I felt a change. And right there, that lit the fuse. And I didn't drink, for a little while, and I was still going to private school. And then in eighth grade, I finally went to back to public school. I went to eighth grade, and I immediately gravitated, being an alcoholic, to the kids that were smoking pot and doing things they weren't supposed to, long hair and wearing like heavy metal shirts. I'm like going, oh yeah, these guys look pretty cool. I'm going to go hang out with these guys. And right there it started. I started smoking pot. And once I hit high school, alcohol. Every weekend, alcohol. It made me, like we say, it made me better looking. It made me, all of a sudden my parents were millionaires. And, it just made everything, it made me being okay being bankrupt inside. And, I got married to my high school sweetheart, and we started having kids, and we got a house, and still I had this bankruptcy going on inside of me, because I could remember you know, having what most people strive to have in life. You know, I had a house that was paid for and cars and all those things, you know, that people work so hard to accrue, and healthy kids. And, you know, yet every time I woke up, I my first thought was, how am I going to get this going? How am I going to keep it going all day for another day? And, you know, healthy kids playing in the front yard and all these things, and yet, you know, I was still bankrupt inside. You know, I did things that alcoholics do. I cheated on my wife. And that was the first time I found AA. I had cheated on my wife, and I was like, what do I do? Oh, AA. And I went to AA, and I heard people sharing. But I, you know, I was still married, and I still had a career, a job, and all these things. And these people were sharing, I've been to prison, or I have a DUI, or I lost my house, I lost my kids. I'm like, I'm fuck. I'm not like these people. I still have all this stuff, you know. I'm not an alcoholic. Alcoholics go to prison. Alcoholics, you know, crash cars. But so I went back out. And those things start happening, you know, the divorce, the moving out, getting the apartment, you know, wrecking cars. I got a DUI, got married again, divorced again. And, you know, in the end, I had all those things happen to me. And I finally got incarcerated when at the age of 42, and I thought that was something that would never happen. And I was just still bankrupt, and you know, I needed help. I asked the judge for help, and he sent me to a program, and I still wasn't ready. You know, I had spent all this time in jail, you know, 7 months in a jail cell and thinking, okay, I'm going to be sober. You know, I can't wait to get out, do this program. I don't know what it entails, but I'm going to do this program. And as soon as I got out of one jail, I got picked up to get transported down to L.A. County. And the first chance I had, I used just like that. And, you know, so I came back up here and went to the program and I did a little bit more time for a violation, and I got out. I'm like, going, okay, something changed in me. Something, I was ready. And I asked for help. I asked for help from a man in this room, and this man appointed me my sponsor today. And I was ready because he started telling me to do things that I wasn't accustomed to doing. My sponsor's really big on patience and belief in the power of God. I mean, once, because I would always ask my friends growing up for their advice or their suggestions, and I never, I'd ask for it, but then I would never take it and use what they said. And to finally, they were, my friends would be like, I'd ask for advice, and like, wait a minute, you know, we're sick of telling you, giving you advice, you don't listen to us. We're good friends, but don't ask us for advice. You know, I mean, I had one friend that I've been friends with for over 30 years. I went down south. Me and a friend of mine drove down there to make some amends, so I could make some amends. I was on and off again with my second wife, and he's like, "This is not a good thing." And I married her, and then he didn't talk to me for 6 months, and we ended up in a divorce. He's like, "I told you, dude." He's all, "But I love you, anyways." But you know, I just, you know, I was pacing back and forth back there, thinking what I was going to say, and I said, "You know what? Quit tripping. You know, just ask to be, you know, ask God to speak through you, so that somebody hears something that they could identify with, or possibly want, you know, attraction, not promotion. You know, see something that, because if I could do this program and wake up and things are happening every day, I'm never once thinking of getting drunk. And it's a trip. I was having some problems, and my sponsor asked me, did you think about drinking? I said, no. He's all, well, the program's working. I was like, you're right. You know, it is working. I'm not even. But, you know, he just tells me, what are the four spiritual principles? Belief in the power of God with enough humility, honesty, and I'm a little nervous up here. Honesty, humility, and what's the other one, guys? Willingness. With enough willingness, and I have with the willingness today. You know, he suggests something, and I do it because I know my life's going to get better, and it is getting better. I never thought that I would ever be able to stay sober and have a joyous life being sober. Because in the end, I ended up just being a hopeless, helpless alcoholic. And I got to the point where my last bottom was, you know, drugs are part of my story. And on July 4th of 2018, you know, I was homeless. It was the 4th of July night, so I was homeless in a gully, in a sleeping bag, watching fireworks going on, and shooting heroin, I liked doing heroin and drinking, thinking, okay, I'm looking at these fireworks, I'm thinking, where are my kids watching these fireworks tonight? And that was enough. The next day I got up and went to detox and following the direction of my sponsor, going through the 12 steps, praying to God morning and night, asking to divorce myself from the freedom from self-will, give me the freedom from self-pity, dishonesty, and my life has gotten better one day at a time. And, you know, neutrality, we talk about that too. Because I have the sobriety today where I'm not obsessing about it, but I'm not running from it. I could be around people drinking. I could go where there's alcohol. Because I know I have friends that have been sober 11 years and they can't go into a liquor store. And I'm thinking that's not the sobriety. That's not the freedom that I'm looking for. The freedom I'm looking for is being happy, joyous, and free. And that's what I have today. You know, I surround myself by people that are on the same mission as I am. I've never had a circle of friends where we had our backs more. You know, I have friends that I'm still friends with over 30 years, and we're really close, but they're not there for me the way the people that I surround myself are with today. And, you know, because they're here, I'm here. And, you know, anybody could do it. If I could do it, hopeless, helpless, drunk, that had lost everything, anybody could do it. But that's what I'm doing today, and that's where I came from. I'm Jerry, I'm an alcoholic. Thank you. Hi, I'm Jerry, an alcoholic. Now, I would like to introduce the main speaker, one of my besties, my friend Jonathan.
I'm Jonathan and I'm an alcoholic. Oh, what a privilege it is to stand up here and say that to you guys today. It wasn't something I was grateful for when the first time somebody told me I was an alcoholic. Anyways, there's a line in the book that speaks out to me that says, taken from the scrap heap, you know, and to a level of life worth living better than the best he had ever known. And that is my life today, you know. Because if you saw me before I decided I wanted to get sober, you'd be like, damn, throw that guy away, you know. But welcome if you're new. And if you are new or this is the first time you came to Springville, I'd like to apologize now. And it's a really good meeting, so come back to it again for other speakers. I guess my first go with Alcoholics Anonymous was when I was 14 and I had only came to a couple meetings because I had an uncle that was one of us. And I guess he could see where I was headed because I ended up back here. But all I remember is it was this meeting in Tulare on La Spina and Prosperity, and everyone looked so comfortable in these chairs, and you know, I'm this little, I was 14, you know, and And I was just so uncomfortable in that room. And I was just like, I got the broken chair. Like, that's all I could come up with, you know, like, because everyone else was comfortable. But today, I mean, this is home for me. People here talk and I feel it because I can relate to it. But from a young age, I think, you know, I always felt off inside and I hurt, you know, I hurt inside for no reason at all, like from a young age. And I was nervous that you would find out, you know, and I had that anxiety. But coming here, you know, I came back time and time again. Like, the court system sent me here after a DUI at 18, I wasn't ready then. I came back to Alcoholics Anonymous on my own, you know, after totaling another vehicle, and I came for like 3 weeks, and 3 weeks in here without a sponsor. That's about as long as I make it, 3 weeks, without getting busy. And I'm back out the door, and it takes years for me to get back here in a lot worse shape. I came in here, like they say, the bottom's on the inside, and I mean, it is. I mean, because it didn't matter what was happening outside. It was when I was ready inside, and I hurt bad enough, like, I went from this place from wanting to die to all of a sudden, one moment, I decided I didn't want to die anymore. And I asked for God's help. I don't know what causes that. Like, that's a spiritual experience right there for me because I was ready to die. And I wanted it to happen. And I ran around with the right people to make it happen, you know, or to end up in prison. You know, I usually had the right people and enough stuff in the car driving around. You know, if I would have got, we would have got stopped, I would have went to prison. But people here showed me how to live. Anyway, this isn't easy for me. I'm just going to get that out of the way right now. It's not something I like doing, and I don't like to be put on display. And I really just want to deliver a message for anyone that might be suffering in here. Because I suffered, man. I was suffering when I got here. I remember being like maybe a few months sober, and a gentleman from my home group asked me if I wanted to come to this meeting. And when I got here, somebody asked me to read. And I remember being up here reading and my knees shaking because I was so nervous to read something I had been reading, you know, 2 months already. And a little less nervous today, but pretty close. But this gentleman, you know, I was brand new, and he's the same guy that gave me a phone list whenever I had found what's my home group today years prior and didn't stay. But he asked me to come here, and I said, yeah, because Sunday was my day off, you know, so that was the iffy day. Like, was I going to go back out? You know, that was the day when I was left alone to my own thoughts, you know, and to my own devices. And I didn't trust myself, man. Sundays, either if I didn't come here, like, I drove up north to a place I went to treatment to go to their meeting. And that's how willing I was to stay sober, because Sunday was the day when I had time to do shit, you know? Because I work all week. Sunday's my one day off, and that was the day that scared the shit out of me. But anyways, this gentleman brought me here, and you know, now I know, like, he was just trying to make me feel welcome. And he did that. And he's, you know, he was probably, I don't even know, 3 times my age. And halfway here, I'm like, hey, we're driving in the middle of nowhere, and I'm like, man, this guy better not be a weirdo. He wasn't a weirdo, you know. He really just wanted me to feel welcome. And you know, what he did for me, bringing me here, like, I've done it for people. And that's how this whole thing works. It's just one guy helping another. And everything that I do here today, like, if I buy someone's dinner and say, oh, you know, don't worry about paying me back, just do it for someone else. Like, that's stuff that people did for me when I got here. What a concept, right? Just paying it forward and being a good person. Because the me that, I mean, today when I see, like, you know, if I would have ran and crossed paths with myself, like, I'd want to kick my own ass, you know, for who I was before. And that's the truth. Like, it's scary. Like, I have a deep appreciation for alcoholism and addiction. Last Saturday, I had to go to a memorial service for a friend of mine that didn't make it here, you know? OD'd. And that's the fact for us. It's that there's a guy from my home group that says, you know, they were good guys, but they just ran out of time. And that's true, because I could have ran out of time, you know? I don't know why I'm standing here. And I had a lot of stuff happen in my life last year that would be, you know what I mean? That if I was going to go out, if I wasn't connected the way I was in Alcoholics Anonymous, I probably would have took a drink, you know? But thanks to working the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, like, drinking's not even a thought in my head today. I don't obsess over it. And the obsession is removed, you know? It says all this in the book. And anyways, when I was ready this last time, I had tried for years to get sober and been sick and tired of being sick and tired time and time again. And my uncle that took me to my first AA meeting, this one morning I was strung out and tired, you know, I'm drunk on the couch. I didn't go to work, and I'm just tired, man, of living. And it's a full time, me and my sponsor talk about it all the time, but the way we drink and use is a full time job. It's 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, and we you know, we go double time. But for some reason that day, I looked up, and instead of praying for death like I had been, because I would pray, man. I'd be like, please, I don't want to wake up. Like, please, just let this be over. And for some reason that morning, like, I had like a single tear, and I just looked up and said, please, help me. I can't do this anymore. And like an hour later, I get a knock at the door, and it was my uncle that brought me to my first AA meeting. And he lives at the coast, mind you, and it turns out he was in town, and he had told some of my family, like, you know, because we think we have everybody fooled, you know, but everybody knows. And he told them he wasn't leaving until he talked to me, I guess. I found this out later, but, you know, he got some words into my head at the right moment when I had that moment of clarity. And, I mean, if he wouldn't have did that, who knows if I'd be alive today, you know, and who knows if I would have came back here. Because I would tell you that this stuff didn't work, you know, when I hadn't even worked it. And, like, you know, like, the audacity one has to say that, you know, that hasn't got a sponsor and done all the shit that they tell people, I'm not doing that. You know, because today, that's how I know what's going to help me. If my brain says, whoa, we're not doing that, you know, like, that's how I know that's what I need to do. And I'm grateful I have that experience today. And I still fight it. But anyways, I ended up, you know, my insurance got me in somewhere. And I got a 30-day head start, you know, 28-day program. And this place, like, you know, basically it just got me away from who I was hanging out with and who had access to me every day. Like, in it. And so I could get a little bit clear-headed and come back and want this, you know. And while I was there, I made a phone call. And because this counselor there, he didn't care about anyone's feelings. He told us the truth all the time, you know, which is what I needed. And we were joking around in there, and he got everyone's attention. And he was like, you guys think this is funny, but he said, look around. There was like 22 people in there. And he goes, two of you guys are going to make it, maybe, this time. And I knew how I had been living. And I knew how much I wanted to die, you know, 10 days ago. And I'm like, well, who says I can make it back, you know, for another time, another treatment? It was my first time going to treatment. It was my idea. I don't know if that's why it worked. But, I mean, if I wasn't connected with the people I was, I might have just been able to detox and come to AA. But anyways, I'm grateful for how it went down. It gave me a little head start. But when he said that, like, I went and saw a counselor, and I got on the phone right then because, like, I was desperate. I was like, I'm not going to make it back if I don't get it this time. And I've held on to that desperation for the last 3.5 years because I know what it's like. And I'm constantly reminded when I see new people come in, you know what I mean, close to death. And no offense if you're in that point, but this is the place where you can change that, you know. But I got on the phone, and I got this guy's number I had met 2 years ago, and or 2 years prior. And this gentleman answered the phone and told me, yeah, I'll be your sponsor. And I'm thinking, you know, he probably remembers me. And it was like 2 years ago, you know, like, and like now I know how many people come in and out of the rooms. But he, not even probably knowing who I was willing to tell me, I will be your sponsor when you get back. But you're going to have to come to my house once a week, and we're going to read the damn book and work your steps. And I said, that's what I want to do. And that's exactly what I did when I got back. When they tell you when you leave treatment, you know, they say, they give you a list and they're like, find a meeting and go to a meeting. And as soon as I got back, I sat around and I actually had talked to my sponsor, and he said, I went to a meeting that night, but the next day when I was talking to my sponsor, that I still haven't had a face-to-face with him, he said, boss, go over to Larry. They have a meeting over there. And my friend Sean will be there. And I went to that meeting, you know. I took direction. Because usually, like, if you told me to do something, I wasn't going to do that, you know. I was defiant from a young age. And even if it looked like I was doing it, as soon as you turned your back, I was going to do it my way. But for once in my life, I just start listening to somebody because, you know, the reason I identified with this gentleman was because 2 years prior, I feel like he had stood up in my home group, but, I mean, it's my home group today, and no one stands up when they talk. But that's how I remember it. But he stood up holding his little pocketbook, and he said that the program of Alcoholics Anonymous not only helped him with his alcohol problem, but with his substance abuse problem too. And right that minute, I identified, you know? And today, I mean, when I was new, I identified when people shared about the pain that they went through, because that's the pain that I was in. But for some reason, these people are happy, joyous, and free, you know? Like, so, some of them are so happy that, like, you leave a meeting pissed off sometimes, you know? And that's the one thing that got me into service work in Alcoholics Anonymous was a guy at my home group that was always talking about being of service and to get out of yourself. And he was just so damn happy, and I couldn't figure it out. And so, like, you know, first the meetings, you know, make you feel good. And then the steps made me feel good, you know. But eventually, like, whenever this guy started getting to me, I went to the business meeting at my home group. And I said, hey, I want a service position. And I did that. They gave me one. I didn't have the sobriety requirement, but they were like, it'll be okay. And you know what? I was a CSR for my home group for 2 years. And I know some people in here because of doing that, you know? The more service work I do here, the more people I got to meet. And a lot of you in this room have touched my life in one way or another, you know? Sometimes we don't realize it, but like, we're helping somebody. And it could be the smallest thing you say that makes something click in someone's head. Because sometimes I hear things 4, 5, 6 times, but I have to hear it from this guy for some reason before it makes sense in my twisted mind, you know? But somebody took the time, you know, and sat down with me once a week that was busy. And they showed me, you know what I mean? What I learned from that was, no matter how busy I am, if I want to live a good life and stay sober, I got to do this stuff. Because if this guy has, you know, more years sober than I have been alive, like he's doing something right, you know? Especially if he's anything like he says he drank and used, you know? Because, you know, it sounded like me. Because people I ran around with and the way we drink and use, we don't get sober, you know? We don't stop. We don't even sleep. You know? The Energizer Bunny on drugs. But the more I did here, I quickly found out that the more I did here, the better I got to feel. And early on, I tried, you know, going to meetings and doing the right thing, and then going and hanging out with the bad people that the reason I came, you know, to AA this last time. And I was sober, you know, but I'd like to go hang out and see the boys. And you know, they're doing everything I was doing. But I'm just sitting there, you know, hanging out, having a cigarette. And then we were behind Kmart in Visalia, and we're smoking, and I'm smoking, and you know, and they're smoking something else, and I'm talking, and someone pulled a gun on us, and then they drove off, and I'm just like, at that moment I was like, what am I doing? Like, I'm doing the right thing, and then coming and hanging out with the right people or the wrong people after, and like, I feel like that was God just being like, dude, get it together. And that's when I stopped all that. Like, I couldn't have both lives. The double life is like, that's my MO, you know, as I work my way into only having a bad life, is when I'm doing the double life thing. You know, and trying to be responsible all day and then do what the hell, whatever I want all night, you know? But when I cut all those people out of my life, and slowly, like, it took me 3 years in Alcoholics Anonymous to have the friends and the circle I have today. 3 years. So if you're new and feeling like you don't click with somebody or these aren't your people, just give it time. And find a home group. Because when I miss my home group, like 2 weeks in a row, I get a phone call from someone that's twice my age, you know, wanting to know if I'm okay or how I'm doing. And nobody I used to run around with does that. I changed my number too, so they probably don't know how to get a hold of me, but it was necessary. Anyways, I came to a point in Alcoholics Anonymous where, I mean, I got another service position, and I, you know, at the time, you know what I mean, I was engaged, and all this stuff started happening, you know, and some of it wasn't normal stuff, and I went through a lot of shit, you know what I mean, on the other side. Sorry I keep saying that, but I'm being real. Like, I would go be of service. I was doing everything that I was supposed to be doing, and things in my life just started falling apart. And I went through a lot of pain, you know, behind that closed door without telling a soul. And it seems like me being connected in Alcoholics Anonymous and being of service, like, I keep seeing people that I click with, and I get comfortable enough to where I start sharing stuff that I normally wouldn't share, you know, and God, like my higher power, sorry if you don't like the word God, but it is what it is. My higher power puts people in my life at just the right moment. I swear, like, and I noticed this early on. Like, I'd be having a weird thought, and I'd see somebody outside the rooms, you know, that's in the program. And it happens to me still to this day. Like, I can't go to the grocery store without seeing somebody. Whether you know them or not, you know them from here, you know? And that's my higher power just reminding me, like, we're everywhere, you know? It's Illuminati. But the more... Shit, I lost my spot now. God puts these people in my life right at the right moment. And if I wasn't coming here regularly and didn't have the service positions I had and stuff, like, I don't think I would have made it. through all this stuff. And last year, you know, my mom had cancer. Somebody I cared about, I watched their demise, you know, right in front of me. Like, I lived with someone with alcoholism, and it ultimately it made me sick. You know, like the sanity I worked so hard to get back here in Alcoholics Anonymous was slowly being pulled the other direction because of somebody else's drinking. You know, so alcoholism like had its way with me last year. I didn't even take a drink. You know, and I'm now a proud member of Al-Anon family groups also. But anyways, I was being of service somewhere, and the reason I met this person that took me there was because I accidentally overshared, you know, about my personal life outside of Alcoholics Anonymous. And then, you know what, when I went home, instead of just doing what I normally did, I picked up the phone and I called him. That's a spiritual experience for me, because I come from a place and we just don't talk about certain things, you know? And you suck it up and you be a man, and first off, I always think that I can fix everything, you know? And I do a pretty good job of it at work, you know, and in whatever I do, but I can't fix people, you know? And I've come to realize that. It just seemed like it's way too many coincidences since I've been here, that it's not coincidences, you know? The whole is it odd or is it God thing. And if I wasn't, like, all this stuff happened last year, and I was in a lot of pain, you know, and for some reason, like, I'd have that window, you know, when I'd have to go secretary on Saturday night in Tulare, I'd have that window, like, where I had a little bit of peace. But there was weeks I'd be over there in that church making coffee, sick to my damn stomach, in so much pain, but I was there being of service for somebody else, you know, because that's the fact, is when I was in a lot of pain and knew, somebody came and opened that damn door and made the coffee, you know, and facilitated my recovery for me when I needed a meeting, and who knows what the hell was going on in their life. Because, I mean, if I was in that much pain over there, you know, praying in a church before the meeting starts and throwing up because I'm sick to my stomach, like, but still there to be of service, like, who knows who else has done that? Like, it describes this all in the book. I mean, this is how we... It tells you what's wrong with us in here. It tells you why we do it. It tells us about the insane thoughts that come before we take a drink. You know, like putting an ounce of a whiskey in an ounce of milk. Or, you know, and... Because that's insane, whoever would think that. You know, they won't hurt me. My thoughts are a little different, honestly, but I can identify with it, you know? And it took someone that's been through this book to interpret it for me, you know? And the more I read it, the gift of this program is, if I'm working with other alcoholics like I'm supposed to, my sponsor says, you know, boss, there's no wiggle room here. You know, you have to give this away if you want to keep it. And what I've found is, the more people I get to help or take through this book, the more my nose is in this book. And the more I'm in the steps, because I'm taking someone else through and sharing my experience. And it's like redoing your steps, helping someone else do their steps. And you get to see this light come on in someone's, you know what I mean, eye. Like, you get to watch someone that, when they first start meeting with you, they're in pain, you know? And I have a knack for seeing that. Like, I can see, when you first walk in, I can see if you have pain behind your eyes. Like, because I know what that's like. And, but you get to watch all of a sudden, you know, they get that twinkle in their eye. What a blessing, man. To see somebody light up as they're reading the doctor's opinion, you know, and be like, oh my God, this is me, you know, because that's how it is for me. I mean, it says it in plain as day in there, you know, it talks about the phenomenon of craving and the allergy. And it is, you know, it's a phenomenon. It's unexplainable. Like, it, you know, for reasons that you can't... understand, you know, I can't take a drink. And I got to do 1, 2, and 3 every day, you know, first thing in the morning. Whether I think about it or not. Like, when I'm in the shower, I know I'm an alcoholic. I can't think. And half the time, if I'm connected with my higher power and keep that conscious contact with God, I recognize these weird thoughts before they can manifest in anything. But what I've learned here is the more I pick up the phone and tell someone what's going on, the more they can rewind and, you know, play back my insane thoughts and the things that are going on in my head and be like, look, this isn't normal. And I don't think I've ever been normal. I'm just going to say that right now. But I have some sanity today because of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because, I mean, I would, if I'm not working a program, I mean, I'd rather take a drink or blow my brains out. Like, that is the fact for me. Like, I am miserable. Restless, irritable, and discontent is a very cute way to put it. But that's what it says in here. And there are definitely characteristics I have, you know, when I am in that state. But the bottom line is, I mean, if you don't do the work here, you don't get to reap the benefits of it. Like, I mean, I've had people question my sanity because I'm so happy. And that's what I strive for today, you know? I want to be that happy that somebody else is pissed off. Because someone's pissed me off before from being happy, you know? And maybe it'll help them. How long have we been talking? Oh, we got a good 20 more minutes. Anyway, someone sat me down and took me through the book. And I just remember the first time leaving his house after meeting with him, when I was driving home, I just felt alive. Like, I felt good for no reason. I didn't have to go to the store to get it. You know, I didn't have to, you know, go to someone's house to get it, or a random parking lot to meet a stranger, you know, because your guy ain't picking up. I didn't have to do any of that. I just felt good for no reason. And I couldn't put my finger on it, you know, but all I knew was, I mean, I'm an addict and an alcoholic. Like, when I felt that, I wanted to chase that feeling, you know? That's how this has been for me, my recovery. If I know certain things make me feel good in here, I like to feel good, you know? That's why I drink. Men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. That's in black and white. And what I've come to realize here is everything in black and white in this book seems to be true. The more I read this thing, like, the words change, you know? And really what's happening is I'm changing, and at different times in my life, things in here mean different things to me. But if I'm not continually reading this book, you know, I'm not getting to realize that. And remember, this is how my higher power works. Like something had happened in my life right at a year sober, and when this happened and I'm over being of service, some kid asked me if I could be a sponsor. And at this point, you know, and I'm still like this today, like, I don't like to make major decisions without talking to someone that has more time than me, because I don't trust myself. So if I've ever done anything serious with you or any life decisions, trust me, I talk to at least 2 people with, you know, 30 years of sobriety under their belt. And I said, you know what, let me ask my sponsor before I gave the guy an answer. And I asked my sponsor, and he's like, yes. Like, you know, and so, you know, I'll call him back and tell him he will. I mean, that was my first encounter with helping someone else. And that was the top here, like, for me, is the feeling I got after being able to read the book with someone else and see their life get better, and that obsession, you know, go away. It's fun to joke about, you know, the things that we used to go through. Like, every Monday, you know, we fellowship before my men's meeting, and you know, we tell war stories, and some of it's just stuff you laugh about for weeks, you know, or, you know, for years. But I never thought I'd have the support group of friends I have today. Like, Jerry is my brother, man. And God put him in my life at just the right time. Like, and that's the only way I can put it. Is I gotta realize that when I'm doing God's will and stuff's just happening, I have to go with it. And the more I trust my higher power, and the more I'm not, you know, putting my fingers on everything, the better things go. Like, even when things are upside down, I have that faith, you know, of like, it's going down the way it's supposed to, and I just have to accept it, and it's going to be okay. And when you can be calm, you know, in that storm, and everything else is falling apart, and there's a tornado blowing through the living room, you know, like, and you're just like, okay, I guess it'll be okay. And you believe that with everything you are, like, things end up being okay. Like, that's my experience today, is if I don't trip on it, like, it ends up better than I thought, you know? That's not how I was when I first got here. You know, that is a result of finding a higher power as a result of working the book, or, you know, the steps in the book. And it says that in here, that's the goal, you know, is to get you a connection with something greater than you. It says in here that our dilemma is lack of power. And I'm powerless, man. Day in and day out over people, places, and things. And hang in, guys. My nerves went away, but now I'm not really thinking about what to say. I don't know. It's just a blessing. I mean, the more people that were coming in this room, the more I was like, shit. And but I know everybody in here, you know, this is a room full of my peers. This is people that suffer from what I suffer from, you know, and I suffer from alcoholism, among a lot of other things, you know. And there's things in the book, you know, like saying, like, you know, when you stop living in the problem goes away, you know. And the fact for me today is I have a solution, you know. When things go sideways, I know that I need to go to a meeting. When things are going good, I'm at a meeting. If you don't go to meetings when your life is going good, no one's ever going to want to come here. If it was all people that were all, you know, if their life was in the toilet, you know, at meetings, who the hell would come back? You know, nobody would want what we have. So if your life's going good and you have a little bit of time, make sure you go to a meeting so somebody new can see that their life can be good too. Because that's what kept me coming back, was people that talked about the things that I was going through. And for some reason, you know, they didn't want to, you know what I mean? They didn't want to, you know, commit multiple felonies, you know, or hurt people. But it is amazing to see what this program can do for somebody. Like, I mean, there's people in here that I've had to pray for every day, man, and that are in here, and they're doing it. What I was touching on earlier, though, is like, we can't be in here and get our life better and be talking this big game about recovery and the principles, and then being outside these rooms doing all the things that are, you know, partaking in things that are things we would have used to do that just aren't right. Today, like, when I think about doing certain things, I think about it. I'm like, is this right? Like, because if it doesn't feel right, it feels nasty to me. And it's probably old behavior that's normal when I got here, you know? But certain things like that, I'm like, you know, that doesn't really seem healthy. And, like, well, the first time I caught myself saying that, I was like, whoa, who wants to be healthy? And, but that's where I'm at today, man. There's people in here that tell me to write things down, and I hate writing, and for some reason I do it. Sometimes it takes a little bit of pain, because that seems to be the motivator for everything. But the thing is, we don't have to be in pain to do it. And there's times when I'm doing everything I'm supposed to be doing because I don't want to have to wait for that pain to do it. I just want to be on top of it. Like daily maintenance, you know? But I find ways to make myself super busy to where I, like the other day I was on the phone with my sponsor and he goes, well, I know you're not going to sleep, so make sure you eat. You know, and it takes somebody to remind me these things, you know? Like, it's sad, but when all this stuff happened last year, like, it got that basic for me that someone was like, don't get too hungry, angry, lonely, and tired. You know? That basic thing, like, you know? Because I can tell you, oh, I'm okay because I'm doing this, this, and this. You know? But at the same time, not eating and working myself to death because I can run from problems doing that, you know? My favorite thing to tell people when I was out there was, I'll be okay, I'm just going through it. And in here I realized I was going around everything, you know. Today I really go through things. When you talk about it with someone else, and you actually put some pen to paper to figure out what it is, or what's behind it, you're going through it. And to be able to feel the things that I have to feel today, like being in the other program, I've learned so much about feelings. And that it's okay to feel these things, you know. And first off, feelings, I don't need feelings, you know. But I've been able to learn more. And like at a year and a half, I probably would have told you I had emotional sobriety, you know. But at a little over 3 years... and actually having emotional sobriety, like I never had emotional sobriety, ever. And that's a whole nother game, man. Because certain things, like I get scared right off the bat if I'm not familiar with the feeling. Like my mom, you know, battled cancer last year, and like a month or so ago, she wasn't wearing her wig or her hat, and she had like half an inch of hair. And like this, the feelings I had inside me, I ran out of her house because I thought I was going to cry. Like, which would have been totally okay. You know, I'm a human being, you know, and we go through things and we feel things. But I literally, my first thought was, I got to get out of here. I didn't even cry, but, you know, but it just, I didn't know what I was feeling. And I'm able to pick up the phone today and figure these things out, which isn't something that people like me do. The only way that, you know, three people keep a secret is if two of them are dead. Like, that is real. But in here, like, I don't know what makes it so easy, but I let my guard down, you know, and I'm able to be vulnerable. And like, I won't lie, like I got on my knees back here earlier and just, you know, I begged God to take the nerves from me and I asked for help with this. Because I have that experience, you know, when I asked God for help and begged to take this obsession from me, the obsession left. And when I went through all this stuff last year and something was tearing me apart and someone said, how are you praying, you know? And I was like, well, you know, when I lay my head down on my pillow at night, you know, I say my prayers. And this person said, no, you need to get on your knees and beg, you know? And I have this reminder on my phone that goes off every morning at 6 a.m. that says pray. Because half the time I'm tired and I'm running out the door and I don't do it, you know? Or I do it while I'm driving. But when I started begging for that, you know, help with that, boom, you know what I mean? That was ripped, you know, stripped right out of me. Like, it was very painful, but damn, did God work, you know? And I had to accept it, you know? And people in here helped me get through it. I put people in the car that were new, you know? I put my friends that were in recovery with me. We barbecued every weekend. And we all helped each other stay well, you know? Because that's what we do here. Like, whenever I got better, it's not really about me anymore. It's about the guys that are new coming in here that are saying, these guys aren't my people. They don't know what I feel inside. Because I was that person that there was no possible way you knew how bad I hurt on the inside. Like, there was no way. You could spin it any way you wanted. I wasn't going to hear it because my idea was fixed, you know? I don't care how you grew up or what happened to you. Like, I had it worse being in my skin. And to each his own, you know? We all go through our own stuff, but the fact is, if you are new and feeling that, everyone in this room has felt that way. Everyone in this room has felt that way. And I mean, every day, every Monday when I'm at my home group, and it says, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Like, I just want to, like, repeat that line twice, you know, for the guys that are new sometimes, because it's true. But it says, the people that thoroughly followed our path. So if you don't follow the people that have 30 years, what they're doing, if you don't follow their path, like, don't expect to stay here long. The people I surround myself with, I mean, some of them have 30 years, have a home group, go to, you know, 2-3 meetings a week, and have a service position, you know, and take people to meetings, or call and say, hey, I need you over here, because we need to go talk to this guy. Some of us don't make it here, and someone had to die for me to have a seat here. Over the summer, a friend of mine in here sent me to go talk to somebody. Me and one of my brothers in here, you know, did a 12-step call on someone in the ICU, and he didn't make it, you know. He came out, and then the next thing you know, he didn't make it. And I had talked to him the day before. And that just showed me, you know, especially after everything I'd been through, that showed me, you know, how serious this is. Well, it didn't show me for the first time, but it just reminds me, you know. I haven't had to go take a drink because I did the work here. And the obsession left me. And the more I go to meetings and see new people, the more I'm reminded, you know what I mean? There's nothing pretty happening out there. That's the one thing I know I can't do. When people ask me if I want a drink and I'm at their house, I just say, do you like your house the way it is? And then when they say, yeah, I was like, then I don't need a drink, buddy. You know? Because that's all it'll take. It'll take one drink, you know, and I'll be at a house, you know what I mean, storing cocaine off a table next to automatic weapons. That's what happens, you know. That or I wake up in car accidents. Or on Mooney Boulevard, you know, and misplace a full-size vehicle. Tragic things, man. Hang on. Oh, I'm ready, but... It's 40 minutes. I'm Jonathan. I'm an alcoholic. Thank you for letting me talk.